Okay, so next I will talk about a cross-correlation dipole in the CDM neutrino cross-correlation function due to this relative bulk flow. And next I will talk about how can we measure this dipole in real galaxy surveys. So as there are three talks about neutrinos yesterday, so I will just briefly go through this. And we now know neutrinos are massive particles, and we know the squared mass differences between them from the particle experiments. And however, the absolute mass and mass hierarchy are still to be determined from ground-based experiments or from current SDS, from current galaxy surveys like SDSS or future cosmic probes. So at high redshift, neutrino moves very fast. They have very large velocity dispersion and a very large particle velocity. So they will not cluster below the free streaming scale. So as a result, they will not serve as sources at the right hand of the Poisson equation. So they will not generate a gravitational potential below the free streaming scale. As a result, they will reduce CDM clustering below the free streaming scale. So we all know that this will suppress the pulse spectrum on small scale at the percent level, depending on the sum of neutrino masses. And here's the separation due to different neutrino masses. And the current status from the latest results from Planck CMP data, and we get 0.23 eV, and there are still possibilities for the three kinds of hierarchy, normal hierarchy, inverted, and the total degenerate. So however, we are trying to measure the change of amplitude in the pulse spectrum to put constraints on the neutrino masses. However, we can see neither neutrinos nor dark matter particles in our universe. So we can only see the baryonic structures in our universe. And so we need to know the galaxy bias. To model the galaxy bias, the most direct way might be run a hydrodynamic simulation. So we have baryons, CDM particles, and neutrinos. However, the baryonic physics is quite complicated. It's very hard at least for me to work it out. So this motivates us to look at some different effect which we could use to put constraints on the neutrino masses. So I would call the separation on the pulse spectrum, which is due to the free streaming motion of neutrinos, called the zero order effect from neutrinos on the larger scale structure. So we try to look some different effects. So one might so we wrote two papers on it, and we proposed a new method. And it uses the relative bulk flow between. I mentioned before is that the neutrino have very large particle velocity, and so the velocity dispersion is very large. And here now I'm talking about the relative bulk flow. This is different concepts, and this could be observed through cross correlation between different type galaxies. And I think it's a relatively clean problem and suffers less from the scale-dependent bias. Because if we try to use amplitude of the pulse spectrum, the separation on the small scales, even 1% uncertainty in the galaxy bias may completely swamp the signal. It may create some signal similar to the neutrino effect, and also maybe erase the signal from the galaxy pulse spectrum. And in principle, we could do this for single neutrino mass. And at high redshift, they are relativistic particles, and at a lower redshift, they become non-relativistic. So the bulk flow field, the velocity field will develop neutrino will clustering on. They will also have some bulk flow. However, it's interesting to discuss what's a typical scale of the neutrino bulk flow. So as a neutrino will not cluster below the free streaming scale. However, they will cluster above the free streaming scale. As below the free streaming scale, there's no density fluctuations for neutrinos. So there would be no bulk flow below the free streaming scale. So we expect the typical scale over which the neutrino velocity field varies significantly is larger than the free streaming scale. So here when we try to estimate the signal from the linear theory, we treat neutrino as a fluid. So, and Shuji and Komatsu wrote a paper, they study the linear evolution of the neutrinos. And they do calculations with the four Boltzmann hierarchy equations. And they truncate these equations at L equals 1, which gives us the Eulerian equation, and L equals 2, which gives us the anisotropic stress. And they find the fluid approximation is better, is accurate to 25% for the neutrino mass 0.05 to 0.5 eV and the scales 0.5 and the redshift below 10. So we can get some qualitative results using the fluid. K less. Oh, sorry, I missed the K. And okay, so before we use the fluid approximation to try to calculate the cross-correction dipole signal, we can study this relative velocity field using a linear Boltzmann code. I use class. And this, so in class neutrinos are modeled use phase space, and they have, so we have a different perturbation variables, density contrast, the divergence over the velocity field, and we solve this in Fourier space. Okay, so we work under the assumption we are working under the adiabatic initial conditions, so there should be no isocurvature. And so under this approximation, so Derek has talked yesterday, so we could, so we have just one, so we have, so this is a primordial curvature of perturbation, and if we could measure this from the galaxy density in the real galaxy surveys, and we divide it by the transfer function for dark matter, and then multiply by the velocity transfer function for any velocity field we are interested in, and then transform back to the real space. We could get the velocity field for CDM relative velocity. Oh, no. To get the velocity field for the CDM and for all, and also for the neutrinos, and then we could get the relative velocity field reconstructed from the galaxy survey data. And so we can calculate the variance of the relative velocity field. And here's the dimensionless power spectrum for the primordial curvature perturbation. And here's transfer function for the divergence of velocity field. And here we assume no vorticity. We work under the assumption that there's only potential flow. And okay, so this part, I call this the relative velocity power spectrum, and it's a function of K and Z. So I plot it, and this is a high redshift, and this is a lower redshift, and this is a scale. And you would find that at higher redshift, just after recombination, even for the neutrino mass to be 0.4 eV, they are still moving very fast. So this contribution is mainly from the CDM particles. But when we go to the lower redshift, the small scale, I think, is all still the contribution from the CDM velocity field, because neutrinos will not have the bulk velocity field at the below the free streaming scale. And you would find that at larger scales, so for example, look at this curve, the neutrino is actually very heavy, and you would find that there's no relative flow between neutrinos and dark matter at this scale. However, for the lightest neutrino, this scale, there's still relative bulk motion. So, of course, neutrinos will fall into the dark matter potential, but you need to give it some time after they completely cool down and then fall into the gravitational potential. And here's the actual plot for, so this is a velocity dispersion decays as 1 plus z, and this is the relative velocity field. So when we go to the lower redshift, the Mach number for this four neutrino masses varies from 1 over 2 to 1 over, I think, 9 or 10. So this is, I think this is observable. So there will be some observational consequence from this effect. And even for barium, so now we are at a stage that, So neutrino, you would find it, so it might be hard to see this. So this curve reaches its maximum at between the redshift 0 and 1. And these all curves have a maximum here. So After this point, they begin to force into the gravitational potential. However, at present, so at redshift 1, we are still have very large relative motion. So we are at the best stage to use this effect to put constraints on the neutrino mass. So you need to give some time for neutrinos force into dark matter potential. So even for baryons, so I think most people here are actually more familiar with the relative motion between baryons and CDM particles. This happens because after recombination, the baryons decouples, and there will be strong, very large relative motions between baryons and the CDM. And however, at redshift 0, baryons at least are at a relative large scales. The baryons are moved according to the CDM. So neutrinos will, maybe after a long, long time, neutrino will, there's no relative motion between neutrinos and dark matter. And I have talked about the scale over which the neutrino velocity field varies significantly. So I will talk about the scale over which the relative velocity field varies significantly. So this is a velocity cross correlation function from, I do Fourier transform this to the real space and I get this. So again, at high redshift, there's no, these four curves have no difference. However, at lower redshift, you would find we have the velocity field, the relative bulk flow between CDM and the dark matter, between CDM particles and the neutrinos are different. So we quantify the scale which over which the relative velocity field of VNOC varies significantly as a point where this point falls to the half of its maximum. And we can look at the scale here. So we assume that below this scale, the relative motion, the relative field can be taken as a constant. So we have a big picture now. So we have a universe. So this is a picture for ocean current on our Earth, and we have a very large universe, and at different parts of our universe, neutrinos move relative to CDM particles. But I don't expect to see these circles on large scales because this. Okay. So we have a coherent volume, and in this volume, I assume the background relative motion is a constant, is a good approximation. And of course, this will modulate the evolution of CDM particles and the neutrinos within this subvolume, and assume this is neutrinos and this is CDM. So how can we see this effect? So assume I sit on the dark matter particles and I can only see the dark matter particles surrounding me and one neutrino wind flows over me, and I would find that's not that much effect. The same thing happens when you sit on the neutrinos. However, if you try to look if you sit on the dark matter particles and you look at the neutrinos, you would know that a neutrino flows over me. So assume this is more universe than so it's no longer isotropic. We have a preferred direction, which is the direction of the relative velocity. And I would expect that there would be a dipole appears in the cross correlation function between C nu. And this is again the monopole, and mu is cosine theta, and theta is the angle between R and V. So in this volume, I treat the background velocity as a constant. Actually, this is a squeeze limit for a long mode over the velocity field. And we use a moving background observation theory from Tesler-Kohovich and Hirata's paper. They use this to study the relative motion between baryons and the CDM particles. And here's hydrodynamic equations. And we put up around the background velocity. So we have Vc, Bg, Vnu, Bg. And however, for phi and delta C, delta nu, we still perturb them around the zero. And okay, so this.
Linear perturbation theory.
Linear perturbation theory, but at the background long mode, okay. So we work, so actually work in a limit, so to get some qualitative results. Yeah, so these are all, so here, yeah, so these are linear terms and this is background terms and again linear, so I think this method is a quasi-linear treatment. And this is a dipole from our moving background perturbation calculation. So the solid blue line is the dipole signal. And you would find the signal increase when the neutrino is heavier. And the maximum, so it's also hard to see from here. So the maximum of this curve shifts to larger scale when we decrease the neutrino mass. So when I talked this before, so at that time we still don't have n-body simulations, and they will say, okay, so moving background is a linear treatment, and it cannot capture the effect above the coherent scale, and there's a lot of problems. So okay, then okay, so we have n-body simulations. This is four simulations. Derek have talked yesterday, so we have run n-body simulations. This is box size, and we have two ingredients in our n-body simulation, and we can calculate the dipole from the velocity field on the grids. Okay, so here's the result. The solid red line is a dipole from n-body simulations for these four neutrino masses. And this dashed blue curve is from theory. So I think at this scale, the order, the linear treatment still is close to the nonlinear n-body simulations. However, at this small scales, the linear theory have underestimated the signal. So how can we observe something that we cannot see? So I cannot see dark matter particles nor neutrinos. So we propose we might cross correlate different galaxy types. So this is density contrast for galaxy, and this is density contrast for a different galaxy. And they have different masses. So we all know that the CDM bias will be different. Oh, here FC and F nu is a mass fraction. So I factor the mass fraction out. And so here B nu could be 1, 2, not a very small value. And I would argue that the dependence of different mass halos on the neutrino background is similar. And I would expect that these two neutrino bias is the same, not necessarily equals to one, because the neutrinos do not cluster on the small scales. So the presence of a neutrino species will correspond to change over the background density. While the CDM is cluster at a small scale, so in this background we have a lot of densities and heavier and a lighter halo form in this background. So they will have different dependence on delta C, but I think they should share the same dependence on delta nu. Yeah, we might use some other traces like 21 centimeter, or cosmic tides. So I like cosmic tides a lot. So they reconstructed a different. They reconstructed a density field. I think they can also be taken as tracers of a larger scale structure. Okay, here's the plot JD have showed yesterday. So in TNU, a very large n-body simulation, and they also had a counterpart which called TN code. And they have 24 cube nodes, and they calculated the delta C, delta nu, which is a local density contrast in all these nodes. And they also find the most massive halo in all these nodes. And we have TNU and TN code. We minus the mass from, I think it should be TN code. mass of TN code minus the mass TN nu, and then divided by the, and this is the change of delta nu, delta c. So here we're calculating the halo bias, and the scatter of these points are very large, and they choose two ways to calculate the neutrino bias. One is to use the mean value of these points, and another is to use the median value, and then fit it to lines, and they get this result. So this bias is actually the bias defined in Neostock, and B delta C and plus B nu delta nu. However, here I have factored out the F nu. So I show here that the neutrino mass for T nu is 0.5 eV, and the mass fraction is about 0.005. So B nu divided by that, you would get the neutrino bias should be between 1 and 2. So from this, this should be a little larger than 1, and this should be around 2. So we have detected this neutrino bias in unbodied simulations. And I think a sigma is about 6 sigma. So I have talked so much about this. So how can we observe this? So we cross correlation with different galaxy types. As the dipole is anti-symmetry between C nu.
Sorry, can you go back? I guess I missed it. So this is the difference in the mass of cold dark factor?
You mean this?
I want to see what is this axis.
So they have a lot of nodes, and they have, so they pick up the one of the most massive halos in each node. And we have two simulations. And in TNU, you have, so you would find one biggest halo. And in TN code, you can also find one. So this is the difference between these two the masses of these two halos. And I think this is, sorry. So Derek, can you explain what XS is? Go back one. Okay.
So in order to measure B, you have to correlate something with something.
Yeah.
But C and U are correlated, they're not independent variables.
Right.
So you have to subtract off the correlated part. If you're gonna measure B nu, you've got to get rid of the correlation between them. That's what the x axis is meant to do.
So how does the x axis do that? You're subtracting delta G, two different delta G's, I guess. I guess I'm just trying to see how you're subtracting the first
term. You take the actual delta nu in that cell and subtract the expectation value of delta nu given the delta C in that cell.
I see. Okay. Good. I see. And then if you fit to that, then this is B nu.
B nu.
That's like the extra part where there's a bit of extra neutrinos.
This is the impact of the neutrinos, all of the cold dark matter mass behavior. So
okay, so then I don't understand the vertical axis here. So this is something of different mass?
That is two different simulations, one is just CDM.
Why is that? I mean, they're using it as if it's biased, but it's not exactly.
So it should
have related to the bias, right? Change in the number of halo will be something like the change in the mass of the halo multiplied by the derivative of the mass function, right?
But why do you guys do that?
Use the mass function, you can somehow translate, I think, the y-axis.
No, I know that's what they're trying to do, but it's not as obvious. It gives you the standard bias factor, which is a large-scale modulation effect. And here it's in response to the changed neutrino mass.
It's like doing
a linear response to a parameter change, which is not really exactly biasing because it's another parameter. It's not the parameter you change when you do biasing. It's the parameter
so
here is the neutrino mass. Wasn't that right? Between the two simulations, you had different neutrino mass.
Well,
no,
so it's the
no
delta.
Delta.
Oh, no, no.
No, no.
What?
It's
not okay, but that's the same thing. It's just what I'm trying to say is that the derivative here is with respect to that changed neutrino mass as opposed to it being something within the simulation itself that's explicitly.
No, but that's what the equation is, right? The equation is delta object in new language. Delta object is going to be B times delta nu. So if you differentiate, you get B. That's what the definition of B.
So the x-axis here corresponds to the local neutrino
mass. No, but you're doing delta m of an identified halo in two simulations
as
divided by delta neutrino mass.
No,
so
no,
function of the local density of neutrinos.
Ah, okay. So there's a large scale.
I think I'm convinced, though. But that's my
anyway, that's fine. Being the timekeeper, I don't care about.
Okay, so the bias is 0.01, but why do you have two different biases?
Oh, one is use the averaged value, and another use the median value. Okay. So the bias should be between 1 and 2. So we have a detection, and I think it should be 6 sigma or 5 sigma. So when we do cross correlation, and the dipole should be anti-symmetry between the C nu, and we have a minus 9 here, so we need to have a two traces with different CDM bias. And we also need to reconstruct the velocity field. Here's the density contrast from a galaxy. And this is a transfer function, and Derek have talked this about a lot. So this is very similar to the baryon acoustic oscillation, the reconstruction in baryon acoustic oscillations. And okay, here, so we can, so this is a plot in our first paper, which is a prediction from linear theory. And the error here, so we have a cross-coefficient dipole in real space. We can do Fourier transform to real to Fourier space. And it's more easier to do forecasting Fourier space between different k-beams are independent. And so for a future survey, we model it to be a 1 gig per second box. And the number density is actually very high, about a tenfold the current SDSS data. And however, you would find the relative error as the error is very small. Well, for the current SDSS and the 2DF, you would find if neutrino mass is about 0.2 eV, and we are possible to get a detection. However, one thing I need to mention is that when we do forecast, we use the results from the linear theory. However, from unbody simulations, you would find the signal is actually larger than the prediction from linear theory. So I think the result would be better if we use a fully nonlinear signal.
What is the observable here that you're using? The cross power spectrum?
Oh, so we have a dipole in the cross correlation, and when we transform, so
we don't observe neutrinos.
So here's the this is dipole in the power spectrum.
Oh,
cross power spectrum P. So cross so we have a monopole component in the cross power spectrum, and we also have a dipole component in the cross power spectrum. And
you want to say something about halos, because these are called dark matter neutrinos, we don't see either of them.
So measuring the anisotropy.
Oh, okay.
Galaxies.
Okay. Yeah, galaxies. So this is a signal we could observe, BC1 minus BC2 times B nu, FCF nu. And this is a signal.
I don't know what BC1 minus BC2 is.
Sorry?
So they estimate what is the relative velocity of neutrinos from the galaxy distribution, right? I mean, they take a direction. They measure the
anisotropy. I guess I'm saying you need to know something about halos to be able to do this, because if all the halos fit together, then there is no dipole. So, and I don't see anything about halos. I mean, I guess
B is the halo is mass dependent.
But
I
B
think
is just
you have to measure that.
Let me think
of
what
you're saying in real
time. Let's say I think red galaxy and blue galaxy is different from B.
Yeah, this is a galaxy for different types.
So you're saying B nu don't have to be different for different galaxies?
They could be, but for the most common case, I would.
Okay, I see.
So we do, we need a local direction and then I calculate the dipole. And this is a forecast. So, and okay, so I think the neutrino the neutrino CDM is a relative clean problem. And if there's no relative motion, there would be no dipole. And however, there are a lot of effects could produce or suppress power on the small scale in the galaxy power spectrum. And this suffers less from scale-dependent bias because our signal is proportional to the difference between two bias. So if we have 1% or 2% or maybe 5% uncertainties in the bias, the signal will just also change that part. And however, when we try to measure the amplitude of the power spectrum, so even 1% uncertainty in the galaxy bias will completely erase the signal. And however, there are still challenges that JD have shown plots yesterday. So the neutrino dark matter interaction is relatively clean. However, when we try, when we measure the CDM halo dipole, there's also a dipole signal there. How can we disentangle the dipole from dark matter, from CNU, from CH, so we are still working on it. And also, it's interesting to, so neutrino, the velocities for neutrinos, the neutrino velocities has a distribution. So we have high energy neutrinos and low energy neutrinos. So low energy neutrinos are already falling into the gravitational potential. While I would expect the signal from the low energy neutrinos will be larger, while those neutrinos moves very fast would have smaller dipole effect. Also, it's the problem of the neutrino halo bias. We need to calibrate it in unbody simulations. However, we cannot observe halos. What we see are actually galaxies. So again, the baryonic feedback or baryonic physics. So baryons will again affect both CDM and the neutrinos, and they will interact with each other. So we don't know what happens. So okay, that's it.
Anymore. Which ones did you say would be a bigger relative velocity, the slow or the fast neutrinos?
I said is that I expect the dipole signal should be larger for low energy neutrinos because the interaction between them and the CDM particles are stronger,
but they're more like CDM, so won't they have a smaller relative velocity?
Actually, yeah. So, okay.
I mean, very slow ones are CDM, so they have no relative.
Yeah, so I did a test in here. So when I increase the neutrino mass to 1 eV or 2 eV or 3 eV, the relative motion is very small, so they already fall into. So I think that should be a value, not the lowest energy neutrinos should be between the range, and we have should have a best value. Yeah. So I don't know. We are still working on it.
Yes, I think there's a factor coming in from the front
of
neutrinos. So as the heavier, although the relative motion comes down, there's more of them. Is that why there's a sweet spot?
Let me think. Sorry, I don't. Maybe.